We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order.
It appears as though something has happened in the motorcade route.
Lee Oswald has been shot.
Paddock fired out of two adjoining rooms using a device similar to a hammer to smash the windows.
Several flying saucers there of extraterrestrial origin.
Digging Chris Graves.
Hi, welcome back to Digging Chris Graves. I am Chris Graves, and I have a very special guest with me right now, and I've been wanting to have this gentleman on for quite a while now. We were able to make it happen tonight. Mr. Tony Arterburn of Wise Wolf Gold and Silver and America Unplugged and the Arterburn radio transmission. Welcome to the show, sir.
It's great to be here. That's a awesome intro. Why have I never seen that?
I'm not sure because I'm not good at promoting, I guess.
I don't know. It's just magnificent, my friend. Great job. Yeah,
that was put together by Mr. Jason Barker of the Foxhole.
Okay. So, well, you know, my intro has that same audio from George H.W. Bush.
Yeah.
If you've ever listened. I have several intros, but that's one of the ones I use. You know, it's got the little radio. It has some static, and then it hits that transmission, and there's
right.
We Maybe have that's for what... us the opportunity to forge
a new world order.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's where Mr. Barker got that from. I'm not sure.
Hey, man, I'm happy if he did. If he didn't, it's still great.
Yeah. Well, how are you doing today?
I'm all right, brother. I'm working on my shop and all the other periphery projects and just doing the best I can, just getting through the day like everybody else, you know. We're just going into this weird reality.
Yeah. This psyops reality, if you will.
I mean, right? Trying to figure out which way's up or down. I mean, we all know where we came from, right? We all have a pretty good grasp of what reality is. And then you just keep going further and further into this timeline. And there's a reason we're all here, but it is strange, isn't it?
Yeah. And it seems like there's a concerted effort to try to rewrite where we came from too, at the same time as whoever they are, keep distorting and blurring the lines between reality and make-believe basically. Well,
yes.
Right off the bat, I wanted to ask you, what made you want to get into the world of broadcasting to begin with? Because I think that maybe I've heard the story maybe once or twice, but I never actually got to ask you yourself. I know you ran for Congress, and obviously you served in three wars. What made you want to speak out and get the truth out, if you will, and just to kind of like put together an audience for yourself?
Well, I'd say it would go back to my early years, 12, 13 years old, maybe even earlier, you know, riding around with my dad, my grandfather. They were, you know, listeners of talk radio and audio books. I remember, and I've, you know, talked about this on my show, you know, mid-90s, my father is an entrepreneur. He built convenience stores, had a fuel business, and had chartered a bank. Came up from nothing. You know, my dad, you know, I mean, zero. Like he really is one of those stories. Like he's like, who's the hardest working guy you've ever seen? I'm like, oh, it's my dad. I mean, just right. You know, had a swimming pool installation business at like 16. You know, hired his friends. You know, like that's how he put himself through college. And you know, he was the first male in his family, our lineage, to go to college and went to Texas Tech and got a business degree. So, you know, he made a lot of connections with people that had, you know, built other businesses and people he looked up to. He just, you know, showed up, wanted to work. He wanted to build something. So I got to see that. And then I also got to see his transformation, because I remember him vividly, you know, just, you know, this is before the Brady Bills, before Waco, before Ruby Ridge, all this stuff. And he would be like, you know, why do people need AK-47s and AR-15s? Was Mexico going to invade us? I remember him saying that, you know, like he was just confused. Like, what's the push here? I don't get it. We got deer rifles. You know, we always went hunting and, you know, we learned outdoor. He's very outdoors. I mean, I shot my first deer when I was seven. Wow. You know, like he put me in the stand with a 243, and I was like, you know, asleep in my coveralls because it's so cold. He'd wake me up. It's like, there's a buck, you know, you got to wake up. There's a buck, son, you know, and
right.
Make your first shot. And so I grew up around guns, but it was around that time that he saw the overreach. He saw, you know, the Clinton administration and the Brady Bill and the assault weapons ban. And then of course, Ruby Ridge and then Waco.
Yeah.
And he started looking and taking me to hear some speakers and people like Lieutenant Colonel Bo Greitz, who had a radio show as well. He was the most highly decorated Green Beret in Vietnam. They based the movie Rambo off of him.
Yep.
And Don Jeffries talks about Bo Greitz and hidden history.
Yep.
Bo Greitz is a very interesting figure. I got to see him live. I remember, you know, he signed books for me. His book, I think it was called Call to Serve. Inside the book, the inscription says, hard like woodpecker lips, together we win. And he wrote that to me when I was 14. Wow. So I used to tune in and listen to his show. And we're talking, you know, 14, 15 years old. And I had a driver's license at 15. My grandfather passed away suddenly, heart attack, you know, at 61.
Wow.
So I ended up getting a hardship license. I took care of my grandmother. I just kind of grew up fast. You know, I had in between listening to Megadeth and Metallica and Pantera and going to the gym, I would tune into Rush Limbaugh and I would tune into talk radio. And again, you know, people like Bo Greitz, you know, on AM stations outside of Rockwall, Texas, which I'm from the hometown of Alex Jones. Alex Jones is from, we went to the same schools. He's just a little bit older than me.
Right.
He's not Bill Hicks, because I know people like that. You know, that you went to school with him. Sorry, folks, he's not Bill Hicks. But I just was interested in ideas, because I remember, you know, that I saw my dad's transformation, becoming more aware. And then this was about the time of the Republican, the contract with America, the Republican Revolution. That was a big deal. Mid-90s, I mean, when Newt Gingrich and all these, you know, that was the first time Republicans had controlled the House in decades. You know, it was a long time. And so it was a bit, we really thought, and I, you know, that's where the ideas were. Talk radio is where the ideas were back then. It's not so much now, it's garbage. I mean, I'm sorry. It's just lot of shock jock, and it's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of posturing, but it's where the ideas were. And so I just gravitated towards that as a young guy. And I didn't know quite what I wanted to do. I knew, you know, my dad had made such a mark in business. And I thought, well, you know, I could go to college. Sure, the old man would help me. I wanted to do my own thing. So I went in the military, you know, and I went and signed up for, you know, to be airborne. I wanted to be airborne, and I wanted to do, I ended up choosing military police. I chose Fort Bragg because, you know, I remember from the Rambo movies and, you know, there's a little offhand remarks like in the movie Predator, in the, Schwarzenegger grabs the dog tags like Green Berets out of Fort Bragg, you know, and he's just, that's just where I wanted to go.
Right.
So I went in the military, and that had a huge impact on like how I saw the world. This is right before 9/11.
Right.
So just all of that personal history is kind of culminated. And of course, post 9/11, I'm deep into talk radio, deep into, you know, getting into alternative media. And my own personal history of my own story is just me reading, like a lot of these books behind me. If you can see the video, a lot of these books I had with me in the Middle East,
right,
and places I order, like in just weird places around the world where I was. And I had just, you know, my library, and this is not even close to how many I had, but I just self-educated. So my education was bullets and books around the
that
world.
That sounds like a book right there. bullets and books.
I think I said that a curious mixture of blood, bullets, and books or something like that a long time ago when I was giving a talk to some people in Rockwall. But it just gravitated towards that. And my first radio show, this is a long story, but I always wanted to be on air. So I was 33 and I finally just said, you know, and it was the worst time because I had a divorce. It was a really bad experience. My first wife and I, we lost a child. It was just a really bad, and I was so numb. And finally I just said, okay, what's the thing that you want to do that scares you the most? And go do it. Just figure it out. So I went and did, you know, filed to run for Congress. I was running against the last World War II veteran to serve. I ended up, that's a long story too, but I ended up becoming very good friends with Ralph Hall. And I was his, his surrogate. He would send me out to speak for him in his last campaign. And I was his Twitter. We were very close because I knew so much history. And I talk about people that he was with. I mean, we do a whole show on Ralph. I mean, he was an amazing guy.
How long has he been gone?
2018. Yeah. He was around until 2018. He was born in 1923.
Wow.
Okay. Almost made it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Almost made it. But
you almost got that phone call from the president of the United States.
he definitely had a history that deserves a show. And I probably will write about him someday. We had such a friendship and it was just off. You know, there was no public about it. Once he was out of power and I would go by, you know, a couple of times a week. And I remember Melissa and I would bring him dinner and just at his house. And he would talk about, I know this is kind of off the
subject, this is great. No, this is great.
But I remember like I introduced my son to him, my son Houston. And I think Houston was like 8 or so at the time. And I said, son, this is Congressman Ralph Hall. And he sits on Ralph's lap and Ralph looks at him and says, you know, Muhammad Ali. And Houston says, yes, sir. And he goes, well, he's a friend of mine. And he stayed here at this house. And that's true. He was friends with Muhammad Ali. And he was actually one of his first managers back in a segregated South. Yeah. Cassius Clay. And this was Ralph, you know, and Ralph had, he just had, you could do a stories. He was so amazing. He can win campaigns with no money, you know? Wow. And so I didn't really run against him. I thought he was retiring because he was 90.
Right.
And it's a long story, but you know, again, it's just kind of life experience. I would never trade for anything, you know,
in your opinion, was he kind of thinking along the same lines as people like us in terms of, the shadowy conspiracy stuff, especially from a position where he was in?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. It was interesting. As the closer that I got to him, the more that I could tell, oh man, you could get off. He was really good friends with John Connolly.
Wow.
Right. Very good friends. And he made fun. He would like poke fun. And this is John Connolly was dead, you know, when I was talking, but all these people came alive when we would speak.
Right. You
know, he was friends with John Connolly. He was, well, of course, people that are still alive, like Buzz Aldrin and, you know, Muhammad Ali had passed, but he was talking about, we would talk about, you know, like Lyndon Johnson's 48 campaign. All right. For Senate. Yeah. That's a very famous box 13, the 80 something votes in alphabetical order. They went and buried somewhere out in Duval County that helped Lyndon Johnson get elected to the Senate.
Yeah.
I mentioned that to Ralph once. I said, do you know about box 13? He said, yeah, I was sworn to secrecy on that. And I said, oh, where are you? By John Connolly. Because John Connolly works for LBJ. And I said, what do you know about it? And he said, well, I can't tell you. And I said, well, do you know that the sheriff that buried that box called the guy who lost, Coke Stevens, that he didn't really lose. Coke Stevens won that election. He was the former governor of Texas. I said, you know what happened to the sheriff? He said, no. And I said, well, the sheriff wrote Coke Stevens a letter from jail because he gotten arrested for corruption or something. And he said, I know where the box is. Will you come visit me? And so Coke Stevens drove to the prison. This is a few years after the election. And he gets to the prison and they told him that he hung himself.
Oh,
you know that story, Ralph? He said, I didn't know that.
Wow.
And I, yeah, well, that's, there's some, I think he had a perception, like I'll give you an example. He was supposed to buy the pistol that shot Oswald. Him and I think Mickey Mantle. Like they were, they were friends with Mickey Mantle. I mean, this guy, he was an amazing guy. And it was so funny because I was a pariah to the politicians afterwards. Like, so anybody in the political sphere, like I was, you know, in the in crowd, and I was, because I was speaking for Ralph, and I was part, once he lost, I was persona non grata, but Ralph gave me respect. Right. So like, he was like, that guy, he got, put that guy out front, get him out there, call Tony, you know? So I would show up and he'd say, Tone, you know? So this is like, I had respect from a guy who actually had done something. And that's when I knew I wasn't going to be any good at politics. Cause I was like, I know stuff. I love strategy. I like ideas.
Right.
This is a dark world. And he would pick up on that too, but he was a fierce guy. Like he, you know, he played the amiable older man, like he grab your hand, you know, for about, he didn't need any of that, you know. Right. He, you could tell he was an old Navy veteran in the Pacific, and we would swap stories. He would quote poetry, and the guy was brilliant. And then I just loved the back and forth. It's a part of my life I don't talk about a lot, because those are kind of my wilderness years. Like when I got done with that, it was a gap of 5 years before I went and did anything else. It was so hurtful, because you got done, and like nobody wanted anything to do with me. It's like, well, you were on the losing team and the new guy doesn't like you, you know, and the new thing, it just what the way it was. And I made a lot of good friends with older people, you know, like in the party system in politics. And I have all the right enemies when it came to that. But I always thought it was interesting. The guy that beat him was John Ratcliffe. And John Ratcliffe went on to be the director of national intelligence.
Right.
Okay.
Heard that, yeah.
John Ratcliffe does not like me. I just thought that was interesting. Like for nobody, you know, like, so he knows my name, and because he wanted me to endorse him and do, and I said, no. Right. And I would go out and speak on Ralph's behalf, and they put me up front. He just, you know, it was a great learning experience. But those are kind of my wilderness years. Like when I was done with that, it was a lot of like looking for work and trying to find, and not just, you know, I'm an entrepreneur. So like my work is build something, you know,
right.
And I'll never forget that. It's like mid 30s. It's just the worst. I mean, I learned so much. It's why, like, I never take anything for granted, just because there was just periods where I just, you know, had nothing, you know? So everything I do is I kind of think back on that. I was thinking about that today, you know, just like, okay, there's so much stuff I got to balance now, Chris, but nothing compared to having nothing, you know, like nothing is compared to nothing. Right.
I can identify with that. And I am 40 now, so I'm still trying to climb out of that hole myself. And it's not easy.
Well, I'm 44. I just turned 44, and 40 is a good age. I was ready to be done with my 30s. It's just like, let's get that one over with.
Yeah. Check mark. Done.
Done. Got through it. Lived through it. Can't believe it.
Right. Right. Now, I wanted to kind of back up with your friendship with him and with your father, you know, from people from different generations. Did you ever get a sense that they were questioning things like, you know, in modern times, like 9/11? And I know, like, you had mentioned Waco and things like that, that was only happening at the time that he introduced you to, you know, the talk radio circuit and things like that. But did he ever give you kind of an idea that, you know, from his own perspective, that things just weren't right about that particular day?
From my father, definitely. Yeah. And I would say the same thing for, I don't want to speak for Ralph.
Right.
Ever. We these subjects and some of this, it was just kind of a history was understood. Like, don't you get it? You know, kind of thing. I don't know that he would share it. And you got to understand there's an evolution to me too. Right. And it's not that I, when I was, if you go back, if you can find any of the archive, the Tony Arterburn show, it's very much like Buchanan, Ron Paul-esque. I was still a black sheep. Now I'm like, I crossed the Rubicon a long time ago, and I just decided I follow trends and I look at what's happening. You know, especially I will arrive at a belief system based on research and internalizing an idea and then fact checking that through myself and then linking right. that up to other resources. So it's, I don't just willy nilly throw something out there. It takes me a while, but you and I do, you're part of Paratruther, right?
Yeah.
Because I was a paratrooper. Well, I'm a truther. Happy to be one. I mean, why would you want to be anything else?
Right. Right.
But, you know, 10 years ago, asked me that same question. Are you a truther? I don't know that I would have answered yes. I think I would have been at the periphery or I'm skeptical. You know, I still thought in terms of neocons and subversion and right. warmongering, you know, like let's just, you know, that ultra Zionist stuff to get us into war. I still believe that, except now I have other references that I just didn't have then, you know, and it's not for lack of wanting to know. It's just, it takes time. You accumulate knowledge, you accumulate references. So I don't want to speak for Ralph. I know Ralph was interesting. I think if I'd have had more time to talk with him and he'd have lived longer, we definitely would have, I think he would have liked the show. He was on my show, you know, 10 years ago. I think he would have come on my show today. He would have been happy to associate with me. My father, I've seen his evolution too. You know, I was talking to the old man a few months ago, and I said, does reality seem strange to you? And he goes, son, it's like I'm in a video game. And I said, it's the weirdest, like everything is so strange. Like used to you'd have cause and effect,
right?
Like from, you know, something would happen in the political sphere or current events, and then there would be an effect. I don't see that anymore. Like, it's just like, it's a vacuum. Like you can have outrage and it goes nowhere. Like, is it anything like politics doesn't even cater to you? I've been bringing this up. I'm like, they don't even care. They're they don't even triangulate to like get. I mean, Nikki Haley had a rally the other day. No one showed up, but she's surging in the polls. And I'm like,
you know,
something is. There's such a disconnect between anything happening in politics or in the mainstream or just in what we see the main, you know, just regular people and what's real. Right. And so, I don't know where my dad. I can't speak for him either, but I would say. Anybody that is self-aware at this point is saying, you know, what the hell is this? You know, what planet did I wake up on? I mean, and I feel like it is very disconcerting. It's disorienting, Chris, for me.
Yes.
I consider myself like edgy and, you know, creative and all these other things. It's weird out there. Like yeah. I'm a conspiracy theorist radio host and the world shocks me. Okay. It doesn't frighten me so much as it makes me go, I just don't even know. What is this? You know, like I don't understand it anymore. It's biblical. I mean, you can just finally just throw up your hands and say, you know, this is the Armageddon or the Revelation, Book of Revelation or something. So I don't know, man. I'm privileged to be here. I have so much to be thankful for. I've learned so much. I really want to continue learning and growing and talking to great people like you. Like we've just really have, it's funny how we all found each other, right? This group that we have of broadcasters and researchers. It's a great group.
Yeah, I know. I talked to Don, our mutual friend Don Jeffries, about that too, and it's like magnets or something. Like you know, I only found out about Donald like in 2014, I think, and I think it was shortly after Hidden History came out, and he was on radio shows like down the rabbit hole with Popeye. And the weirdest thing was the first interview I ever heard Don was with that guy Popeye, and Popeye actually contacted me not too long ago about being a guest on his show. And that's kind of like where I started listening to Donald, was on Popeye's show, like in 2014. So it's like this weird like loop in a way that I never would have expected, that like listening to the show back in 2014, that eventually the guy would be asking me. And this is a guy that the only reason I bring him up is because of that loop, but he's also the one that had Wolfgang Halbig of the whole, you know, of Sandy Hook infamy. He had him on the phone for, during a show, and the cops showed up at Wolfgang's house during the interview, and he had to kind of put the phone down and go deal with the cops, like on the air. And like, I don't even know if you can find that episode anymore. So it's just weird. It's a weird world. Like, you know, like kind of a full circle thing. Where were you? Like, how were you introduced to Don's work in general?
Well, this is when, after I restarted my radio show, and when I came back, I was like, I'm not doing anything like anybody does. So I'm like, I'm renaming it something weird too. It needs to be an acronym. And I'm like, and it needs to be like, everybody's got a show. Everybody's got a report, you know, whatever.
Right.
So I was like, I'm going to do a radio transmission. And I'm like, no, I'll do an Arterburn radio. So it'll be ART. It'll be arts, and art, not a science. Right. So I was thinking this will be fun.
Right.
It's ART. And the remember the people, and I'm still on that station in Salem. It's Salem Media in San Antonio. Right. They still, I run one show a week. It runs on Friday evening. I used to do 5 days a week, but when I started, they put me up for a while. I did some weekend shows. I just kind of just dipping my toe in the water. I was doing a lot of self-reflection and research. I'd gotten Wise Wolf off the ground. It was doing okay. And I'd wake up early in the morning, Chris, and I would go in and I would cut a show with a producer, not live. I'd cut it in the studio, and then it would go out at like midnight. I mean, I just was dipping. I just to get on the board. And I thought, I'm going to solo these shows. I don't really need guests. I hadn't spoken even in public in years. So I thought, I'm just going to do this. And so there'd be a lot of times I'd go in and we'd do a show, and I would look at the clock and I'd say, how much more time you got? And he said, well, you got another hour if you want to do anything extra. I said, no, we're going to do it again. So I would I would delete that show and do another show because I was so dissatisfied with the cadence or the rhythm or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm like, I said that word wrong. I mispronounced that. You know, we're on like close to episode 500 of Arterburn Radio. It's not even close. I got way more episodes than that. I deleted a bunch of them because I didn't like the way that it sounded. But right around that time, I was just consuming a lot. My dog Layla, who was alive then, it was my chocolate lab, and we just do all these walks. And she was, we were very close, me and my dog. And if you look at the logo of Arterburn Radio transmission, it's me and Layla on the grassy knoll. and my friend Clint had redone the grassy knoll to make it look like a globe, like I'm on top of the world with the radio antenna. Right. Is really cool. And I just consume audiobooks too. And I kept seeing Hidden History. And I'm like, well, who is that? I don't know who Donald Jeffries is, but I'm just going to buy it. So I bought it one day. And I've told this story live on InfoWars while I was hosting David Knight's show when I brought Don on. It's the last show I ever did for David on InfoWars. And I told the story. I have to send you the clip. And it was I did this long intro about me and Layla and finding Don's work because I thought it was so, you know, like that short amount of time. Like I found Don's work. Now he's my friend. We do shows together and I'm hosting on this show. Like just an obscure radio guy.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of starting out, but you know, that's just, it goes to show you, like, you know, show up and do the work and make connections, you know, and you know, be true to your word and all the stuff that, like, that's been my focus, is like, just be real. There's so much, fake. People are just inundated with fake people. And I get it. And, you know, a lot of the crop of guys that I came up with in talk radio when I first started, they've gone on to syndication and God bless them. They're on the big networks and Newsmax and all these places. I'm not really welcome there. It's not because I'm not a good broadcaster, it's because I don't believe that stuff.
Right.
I wish I mean, well, I say I wish I did. It's not real, but you know what I mean? Like the conservative talk line is just so it's pedestrian.
Right.
You know, and it's, you know, Democrats are really bad and Democrats right. are really good, you know, and we've got to stop those Dems. And I'm like, oh man, it's so much deeper than that. And so I found Hidden History, and I love the story. It's like me and Layla were going for a walk. We do these 2.5 mile walks. And I plugged in Hidden History. I got my headphones and I just go on the walk. And I get about a mile in and I go, this is amazing. Like this, I mean, we're going at, because he's such a good, he's such a great writer, not a good writer. Don is magnificent.
Right.
I get into it and it's a very well narrated audiobook, by the way, too. We get into it and he's just digging into the Kennedy assassination and just leaning into it. And I thought, no, we're going to do another run. We did 5 miles because I just kept walking. I made a ritual of listening to Hidden History on the weekends. I get done with Wise Wolf on Saturday and I put on Hidden History and make, you know, fish tacos. And I mean, this is what we would do. Like, on, you know, there was just months of this, like, this ritual. I'd always have Hidden History on, and then I got Crimes and Cover-Ups, and I remember just driving around like laughing at how hard Don is on Abraham Lincoln. It would just make me chuckle, and I'm like, I gotta find this guy. So I went and I found that he had a show on Truth Frequency Radio.
Yep.
And I've contacted Truth Frequency Radio. He never contacted me back. So I was like, well, I'd be happy to buy some time. I don't know what you do. I have to buy my time and San Antonio, and that's where radio works.
Right.
And I'd love to do a show there. What, you know, I decide that I'm going to move to the Ozarks. This was the whole other story, but I decide, you know, end of 2019, I just feel something's in the air. Like it's just all the accumulated research I'd done and just gut let, like something's wrong. So I'm like, I'm going to get out of San Antonio. And I love, by the way, I love San Antonio, but it just wasn't it had filled its need for me, what I wanted at the time. And I decided I'm going to move on, and I had land here in the Ozarks. So I'm packing the truck and I get a call from the guy who owns Truth Frequency Radio. Said, would you like a show? And this is like months later. And I said, I'd love to. He's like, well, I'm moving too, so I'll be out of the deal, but here's your login. And I put you behind Don Jeffries.
Right.
We're asking to do that. Like, so I got a show right before Don, but I was on 5 days a week. So I get up to Branson. I have no idea what I'm talking to. So I just, you know, I'm doing a daily show on Truth Frequency Radio. Folks, if you ever want to get good at broadcasting, just go do it.
Yeah.
You want to know like how your timing is or your cadence or your ideas. Like, can they match up? Can I read a story? Can I do, just go do it. And, you know, I'd done that before. I used to follow Mark Levin live in San Antonio. So I stopped doing that. I took it down to a couple of days a week. It just was so much, you know, everything at the show. It was expensive, by the way, because I had to pay for that every single day. And, but Truth Frequency Radio didn't charge me. They just said, just give me the content.
Right.
So I just started. And there's so much there too. So much happened. But anyway, I just realized I'm right before Don Jeffries. He doesn't know who I am. Well, then right. I meet Billy Ray Valentine, and I don't even meet Billy on the station because I don't even know he's on there. And I find Billy like through searching for Bill Cooper podcasts, and I find Billy. Then I'm listening to him, and he's like coming to you live from Truth Frequency Radio, and I go, "Well, I'm on Truth Frequency Radio." It's the weirdest story. So you know, Billy hears me, sends me a message. We got to do a show sometime. You know, because Billy's a connoisseur of spoken word. Billy has a great BS detector.
Yep.
He can just tell if you're grifty. If you got any kind of grift, he won't do it. So he listened to a few of my shows. He's like, I like this guy. I like this guy's good. You know what? What's he got? This is interesting. So he reached out to me. And then, of course, he knows Don. And there's just so much happened. And then fast forward. And then all of a sudden, I'm hosting for filling in for David Knight on InfoWars before Alex Jones. And I got Don Jeffries on. It's a weird story. It's fun. you know, and that's why I'll never take any of these guys for granted. Like, I don't, you know, there's, you kind of think about what were you doing 5 years ago, Tony? You know, well, starting out is getting, you know, and time goes by really quick. But hard work pays off, you know, and a lot of luck and God's help and all the rest. I mean, it's, I don't know. The longer I live, Chris, I don't know. How do people become arrogant? I mean, I really, it's an open question. The more that you go through, don't you become more thankful? I don't understand. Like, where does hubris and arrogance just makes me, I look around, I'm like, have you not learned any? Are you a child? And so it's just like at least politicians and these people that walk between the raindrops. I mean, maybe it's just because we are on the right path. You get hammered. Just hammered by life. And I think, just looking at some like Hunter Biden in Congress the last couple of days, like he just looks like he's high. And
didn't he just get up and walk away too at a certain point? Yeah.
I mean, and this is what I'm saying. Like, there's just I don't know what it is, but if you're in love with this world or the right trappings of it or the power or whatever, I just never have been. I love the ideas. I love the history.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's so humbling. Again, there's that word. It's humbling. Like, you get to go on air with Don Jeffries every week.
Yeah.
I don't think of myself as like, well, I just deserve it. It's more like, right. That's so cool. And I get anytime I want in my phone because of what I do, I have some of the most brilliant, I'm not, but I have in my phone, I have brilliant researchers, writers, broadcasters at my fingertips. I can say, hey, you know, hey, Charlie Robinson, did you see this? What do you think about that? Hey, Don Jeffries, you know, hey, Chris Graves, what do you, did you know about? And Chris, I can call up Chris and say, give him a reference. He'll give me 15 more, you know, like he'll send it to me. And then I'm like, hey, I can't download all that.
I know I've gotten into a lot of trouble with certain people being like, stop. And I'm like, well,
I don't want you to stop. But I'm just saying, like, you know, again, but we're so lucky. And that's what I just don't understand. I wish I could. How do you get people that are narcissistic, you know, douches in this life? I don't get it.
I've met quite a few. Like,
yeah,
I've only been broadcasting, and I use that word for myself very lightly, but I've only been broadcasting about a year and a half now. And I've come across some weird cases. I'm like, and it's like, you have no idea where it's like, why do they think they're like, they think they're like king shit, pardon my French or Spanish or whatever. I don't get it either.
I don't know what I give off a vibe too. I think that can make me unlikable to somebody who has that kind of approach too. So like,
right.
I've rubbed some people the wrong way. I think it's okay. I'm happy to.
I think you're fine the way you are. And maybe they might be intimidated just because, you know, you're a big guy, you have big ideas, you're working really hard, and you know, and you don't compromise. Like you were mentioning, you have a lot of people, you know, that went off different paths where maybe they're not exactly saying what's really in their heart. They're just kind of reading off talking points and being rewarded for that. And that's something that you didn't want to do. You know,
God bless them. I have nothing to write. Yeah. I don't have any. I love my path. I like where I am. I like what I do.
Yeah.
I like my group of people that I'm with. I like my, it's a subculture and we're growing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I wouldn't change. The only thing I would change is I'd like to reach more people.
Right.
And I think, to tell you the truth, like I haven't done enough. Like, you know, this isn't, am I giving my best? Or this is the best I can do. I'd say the most of the time it's the best I can do at the time. But like, I got a lot of shows left. I mean, I got a lot of great material.
Yeah.
I'm a better broadcaster than I am most of the time. It's just, I have so much going on in my life, you know, and that's really, it's been, it's been difficult, you know, to do, like, balance everything and knowing what we know too, which is really weird. You know, it's like, are you optimistic? I'm like, sort of.
Not really. I'm not. It's very dark.
It's very dark. I mean, it's like, it's a beautiful day out. I mean, would it surprise you? Okay. If you got a call tomorrow and say, hey, Tony was coming out of his gym and he got hit with a drone and they just droned him in his car. I mean, wouldn't really surprise anybody. It'd be like, yeah, he just said a lot of stuff about the banking system. Yeah. You know, right. You know,
let's hope that doesn't happen.
I hope not. But I think that's funny. You know, like we're just kind of in that realm, you know,
we're in the realm. Well,
people are, I mean, you know, like you look at David Knight, you know, it's just, you know, I get to fill in for him. I talked to David earlier today. We're, you know, after the show. And just talking about free world and, you know, ideas to talk about every week. I go on every Thursday to talk gold and silver. That's the coolest gig ever.
Right.
You know, and because somebody like David will make you a better broadcaster, because this guy is so smart. You can't fake with David Knight. You can't just go on there and just willy. No, man, you better have something of substance to say.
Right.
You better bring your best self. He's not going to ever make you look stupid on purpose, but you'll sound like it if you're not
prepared. He'll let you make yourself sound stupid.
Yes, because you won't have anything to say.
Right.
And so, like, we got to teach the audience deserves, if you're on this in this business and you're here to show up, you better have something to say. And then David is the best in the business. I mean, there's nobody that 3 hours a day.
I know.
I filled in for him for a week once in InfoWars in Austin. I've done it here too at my studio, which is a little easier. Right. But in Austin, I'd show up at 5 a.m. at the studio, you know, before me and the security guard. And I would go in and walk past, you know, the conference room and go into the studio. And I'd sit there and get all the stuff printed out. And I'd start, you know, get my coffee and lay out everything. And that was 5 days of that in August of 2020. And I'll never forget. That was a grind. That was a blur. And I don't know how he does it, because I was still trying to run my bit. Like, I just shut down the shop here in Branson and just drove down. Of course, I'm going to go fill in for David, you know? So anyway.
Let me ask you this, because I don't really hear you talk too much about it, but what was your relationship with Alex Jones like?
He was always very cordial to me. I would see him. He would come out like off of his show during the break, you know, and I'd just shake his hand real quick. Good to see you, you know, and he came on when David was, when I was filling in for him the day that Trump, or the day after Trump had assassinated General Soleimani out of Iran, I was the first show of the new decade on InfoWars.
Wow.
So, the new decade of 2020, the first show, weekday, 8 a.m., there's me. Because that was coming off of the new year, and Trump had assassinated Soleimani. And the second hour, I got Alex. I was told, you know, in my headphones, 30 minutes in, Alex is on his way. He's going to come into studio. And so I had to balance that, because you got, you know, Alex had one view. It's kind of the 4D chess of Trump and all this stuff, what it means. I gave my view that we're in dangerous territory, because this could spill over into a wider war. It becomes an organic phenomenon that you cannot get out of. And then you become, then it defines your presidency. So I was saying, this is prior to COVID-1984. So I'm on the, and I was moving from San Antonio. So I had all my stuff boxed up, and it was just this weird, weird day. And I would just say Alex was always very cordial to me. I was on it's his network. So I'm on his network. You know, I'm friends with Owen Schroyer, and I'm friends with Harrison Smith and a lot of those guys from InfoWars. And again, it's Alex's network. So
would he ever ask your opinion on things, or like just have a casual conversation about, to make you go, like a different perspective than maybe everyone else would have on the guy, because I have my thoughts on him, but I've never actually personally met the guy. So, I mean, I've been on air with him.
I've seen him backstage many times. I tried to give him his space and leave him alone. It seemed like, you know, he's coming in. He's got his 11 o'clock show. I remember when I filled in for David many times, and I remember once in my headphones, Alex was in Virginia watching me, and they would tell me, get this other article. So they were feeding me articles, and I was having to like balance that while I was doing the show live. And they're like, Alex wants you to talk about this. I'm like, I just saw it. So I'd have to like get the new article.
Right.
So
that had to have been nerve wracking, like on the spot. Right.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a broadcast, but you like that kind of stuff,
right?
You know, like I wouldn't trade that kind of stuff for the world. And I have a great audio clip. I need to get somebody. I've been so busy. I'd love to get somebody in production. I like to get all these things that I've been on and host, but I have a great audio clip of Alex Jones saying, it's great to see you. Always love it when you're hosting. And I was like, that's such a great clip. You know, like it's good to see you. Always love it when you're hosting. And I was like, I got to put that, you know, somewhere on my show because Alex Jones said that, you know, at the end of the day, and I haven't been back to host InfoWars after he fired David.
Right.
So, I mean, but again, I'm friends with Owen, friends with Harrison. Just leave it at that. You know, I don't know what Alex thinks of me. Whatever. You know, it's his network and, you know, he earned it. So
you were just happy for the opportunity. Right.
And I'm on, you know, and I'm on band.video sometimes because Don has a channel there.
Yeah.
And Jason Lowe, Titans of Liberty.
Yeah.
So I just. You know, that some people have a personal stake. I let it go. And that, you know, if you don't, you know.
So I won't ask you, because I think it'd be unfair of me to ask you what your thoughts on Alex Jones would be, since you kind of had this relationship with him. You know, other people will go into the territory. Oh, he's a shill. And I go back and forth with that myself. I don't know, just based on some of the things he said or done over the years made me question, like, is that a legitimate change in his mindset or is he being directed, that kind of thing? So I won't even go there. But what I did want to ask you about, did you ever get a chance to meet the late Bill Cooper or see him live?
No, I would have loved to.
Okay.
Unfortunately for me, I didn't get into Bill Cooper until later in life. I just didn't know of him. I think I'd heard of him in passing, or, you know, cause I stay in the realm of alt media. And like I said, in the '90s, the Patriot Radio Wars, you know, one of those people was Bo Greitz. And, you know, there was a fight for the lion's share of listeners. You know, Alex Jones came up at that time too. That was, you know, that was the ascendancy of Jones as well. I'm a Bill Cooper guy.
Me too.
You know, if you go back, you know that because, you know, on the 20th anniversary of his death, my good friend, Mr. Anderson and myself, we drove out to Eager, Arizona.
Yep.
And did a broadcast from his driveway.
I went up there. at nighttime. And I'm like, I'm going to get my ass shot. So I'm
97 North Clearview Avenue, I believe.
Yeah, if I remember right. Yeah.
Right.
I suggest anyone watching or listening, do not go there because that's private property. You don't want to get, you know, and they would be within their rights to blow you away, basically.
Well, it's
but that was cool that you did that though.
Yeah, I had the idea to do it 20 years in, a broadcast, and I was just outside of his driveway. It's me and Mr. Anderson, and I had my headset on and we were piped in live to Don Jeffrey's show.
Yeah, I remember.
Okay. So I'm on, by the way, I looked up Bill Cooper because I read Don Jeffrey's work.
Right.
Okay. So all these synchronicities happening. That's why, you know, when you ask me about Alex, I don't care, you know, right. And let him be him. And I don't,
right.
Again, there's things I could be like, why have I haven't been back on and all this stuff, whatever. You know, I've got such a great life in broadcasting. Leave it alone. Because I hear a year later that I haven't been on InfoWars, I'm in Bill Cooper's driveway on live with Don Jeffries.
Right.
You know, and that's a great clip. That's a great clip. And later that night, I'm in a hotel, like the hotel down at the bottom of the hill, and I'm looking up at Bill Cooper's house, and I'm broadcasting on my own show, talking about the history of Bill Cooper and what led to his demise. And I mean, it was just, it's surreal. Yeah. The amount of stuff that you get to do in this realm that we're in, right? In this life that we chose. And I'm just so very fortunate. I don't have any bitterness.
That's a healthy way to go about it. I wish I could say the same, but I think I'm a work in progress. So I'm trying to get to where you're at, where that inner peace or whatever.
I wouldn't say that.
Not inner peace.
I want to be Zen. Like, I really want to be Zen. We're nothing, but I'm a cauldron of all sorts of things. I have to prioritize my outreach.
Yeah. It's just so much. You got to work at it. Yeah.
Right. I got to work at it.
Which is kind of just going back to the synchronicity. It was actually way before I got to know you. I was at Bill Cooper's grave about a week after you and Mr. Anderson were there. And I even described like this weird art, like I don't want to say artifact, but I think it was like some kind of a bottle that someone left
Beast
on.
Mode.
You were beast mode. I took a picture of it and a video of it. And I'm like, and now I'm doing a show with the both of you. So it's kind of like that, like you said, like surreal that you're calling into, Don Jeffries' show, and you learned of Bill Cooper basically through Don Jeffries. So that's my own little thing. Cause now I'm doing a show with you two gentlemen. And we were about a week apart from that whole, I don't know what you would want to, what would you
it's
call it?
It's not that long ago, but it seems like forever.
It does, yeah.
And I mean, because we've just gone through so much.
And it was right towards the end of Don being on TFR.
It was his last show.
That's right.
I was the last show on with Don Jeffries live from Bill Cooper's driveway.
Right.
Okay. So think about that. What are the mathematical chances that there's some guy with one slot a week on radio in San Antonio that's like figuring himself stuff out, gets a book, finds Don, gets on a station, happens to, because of his work, he reminded me of Bill Cooper because I had heard Bill Cooper before, but I just didn't look into it. And it's like, it's just so obscure because he's shortwave and this is before the video age. This is like this again. I was in the periphery of it, but I didn't know him. And then I remember Don's little blurb in Hidden History. And I mentioned that in that interview with Don. So like, think about that. And so then I'm on the last show that Don does, like, it's just, if you life is funny that way. And it's magical. There's a lot of, because of what you believe and like what you can hold in your mind and then internalize, like you can create that. That's in my opinion, like when I get down, which will happen often.
You get down often? Like,
oh, absolutely. Like before the show, I was just standing in front of a picture of my squad in Kosovo. There was a one of my very good friends that I had to bury in Arlington. Right. And I just put my hand up on it, and I think about that all the time. I mean, that's why none of this stuff, I don't understand how it makes people feel like they're invincible or I don't get any of it, Chris. I every day is, I remember something they wrote about. Don would hate this because I'm referencing Lincoln, but they said that he just like drip melancholy. And I'm like, I do that. It's just like I have a melancholy because I realize how fragile all this stuff is. Like, I've lost so many people that I love. And, this is not it's magical, but it's not a happy place.
No.
Right?
No, it's not. No. Yeah, you're right. It's not.
I don't want to say. It's like put the gun back in the drawer.
No, because I
the filter song. Hey man, nice shot. We have a
right. Yeah, nothing like that. No, folks. You got to watch what you say to certain people too, because they'll use it against you just in case, you know.
Well, absolutely. You gotta watch. But this is
we're all happy warriors.
This is a happy warrior. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, just for the record, Chris and I will never hurt ourselves.
No. Okay. No. I've come too far. Tony's definitely come too far.
I've survived too many things. You know, I'm not. Right. I'm not doing that. But if you ever hear that, just play this back. I've said this on my show about 100 times, but just play this back and. Somewhere there's an alphabet agency weirdo, you know.
He's taking notes.
Yeah. He's also compromised, you know. Went to Epstein Island.
Right. Well, that actually, before we do end, I know that you have told the story before about coming into contact with those alphabet types, like when right after 9/11. And did you ever get to really know any of them? Like the ones that were claiming, oh yeah, we know where Bin Laden is. He's here the whole time. Like, I don't exactly remember right now the exact wording of it, but it was like, you got a sense from these guys that they knew exactly where he was. And you were kind of like, why are we here? You know, that type of thing. Did you ever have an in-depth as in-depth of conversation that you could with spooks, for lack of a better term?
I had a lot of conversation with military intelligence, and where I was, we were the first army company on the ground after 9/11 in Kandahar, Afghanistan. Wow. Okay. So like tip of the spear, you know, the introduction that I got, so this is where you are, this is what we do, was from General Mattis.
Wow.
James Mad Dog Mattis, right? Who became Secretary of Defense.
Right.
Right in front of me, like this, there's 20 guys. This is where you are. This is what we do. And the Marines took the airfield. We're leaving. The paratroopers are here. You guys take over. You're military police. You're going to work with military intelligence. They had this makeshift, set up the makeshift camp. We're going to gain intelligence.
Right.
So they brought in big wigs. And you had guys without name tags. Okay. We had to take our name tags off. Wow. And so there's no names. And, what always got me years later, as I became more and more aware of what was actually happening, was that I was with people who really believed that they were looking for Osama bin Laden. I mean, they were speaking three different languages, Pashto, Arabic, you know, Farsi.
Right.
Looking for clues as to when the last time someone had seen a bin Laden. So they believed it. That was the narrative. Now we know later that the higher ups, like the station chief in Dubai at the CIA, met with bin Laden in July.
Yeah.
While he was getting dialysis in Dubai, Rawalpindi, Pakistan, September 10th. We know these are documented facts. Like they knew. And he's Tim Osmond. It has nothing to do. Bill Cooper was right. But there's so much emotional charge to 9/11 and then the trauma, right? And so you had, these are real patriots. Like they believed they were doing good. You know, like if you've got a guy in Delta Force who's dedicated his life to fighting for the Republic or the United States and being an elite warrior, do you think that person thinks when he goes to bed at night, it's like, you know, I really like working for pedophiles internationally?
Probably not.
They don't think that way.
Right.
But they just don't. Again, it's like you're mad at somebody who doesn't know. But you have to go look for it. You have to go look. It's not something you're gonna find on Fox News, right? You're not gonna find it on any of the major network. You got to go look. So I think a lot of these people that I was there with are patriots, and they were looking for a bin Laden. I mean, I really think they were. But it seems so sad to me now that I know that their superiors, and that's why conspiracies are not monolithic. Right. So when you say 9/11 is an inside job, what do you mean? Well, I don't know what I mean. I know that could it be a you know, if you factor in things like the dancing Israelis that were in prison, federal prison for 70 days, they were arrested dancing and they were there to document the event. They went on Israeli television.
They went on television. Yeah.
That's a documented fact.
Yeah.
And they went. And so what was that about? Even Fox News, Britt Hume covered that. Steve Cameron covered that.
It was a four part series that eventually Fox scrubbed from their own archives.
So, I mean, we could speculate on what it was. And I think, you know, there's in my mind, you know, I can only guess, but I would assume you have rogue elements inside that can change the trajectory of our defense.
Right.
Temporarily. Right. And I think they were showing their, it's like there's this infighting and they're like, no, we can do it this way. Or, you know, and this will redirect the trajectory, like Project for a New American Century, September of 2000. We need a new Pearl Harbor. You know, with the Bill Crystals of the world, the neocons. And I mean, so that's something you can point to and say, that can't be mathematical. I can't line up that these guys would need this. They call it that. They get exactly the same amount of people that die. I mean, it's just like, it's
right.
You can't fathom that, but they did it. And so you to throw everything under the bus at that point, I think is, you know, like I served with some magnificent people. I don't think, they still think, and I, it breaks my heart too. Cause I'm not exactly, you know, they're not holding like Tony's great. You know, he's really exposing, like, cause they don't want to hear that, you know, that,
they don't want to think that they put their lives at risk for something right. that,
like, if right. you, like, if I'd have died in Iraq,
yeah,
it's a really uncomfortable subject, but right. if I'd have died there.
Yeah.
So what, for nothing, you know? And again, not a hero. Would have just been another guy, you know, if you're there in that country and you get blown up, you know, it's like, it reminds me of the story. You ever, the Civil War narrative by Shelby Foote. And, he tells a great story about these Union officers that captured this Confederate, and they're on horseback and they're taking him to holding or whatever. And he's walking in front of the horses, and one of the captains leans down and says, Hey, Reb. He's like, why are you fighting us?
Right.
And the Confederate looks back up and says, cause you're down here. Wow. Right. That's war.
Where's
like
that
going foreign wars. Like you're down here. So it's so disgusting that, you know, if you had the responsibility to, like, if you have a solemn response, if you're commander in chief, and you, like, the Iraq war, you really did that? I mean, that is just an unforgivable sin. And they did it. And I took part in that. It's like, well, some of that stain is on me. And I'm not clean of that.
Right.
But so there's a lot of it comes out in my broadcast. It comes out in what I believe, because I think that we have a responsibility to teach future generations and to call out when you see it in real time, like, that's a lie. That's not real. That's going to lead to the deaths. So not only the soldiers and people that you send over there, but the civilians and the kids and the women. It's like, you know, it's satanic. You know, war is a ritual. It's organized murder. Sometimes it's necessary. Hate to say it. Sometimes you got to defend your home, hearth, and you. When it's time to fight, you better be ruthless.
That's where it gets tricky, because just studying things like the concept of a false flag, it's like, well, were we really attacked? So, but I understand what you mean. You have to defend your home.
Sometimes you have to defend hearth and home.
Right.
But, you know, cause they're down here, right? That's the way it works.
Right.
But I would, you know, but there's so much of the false flags define our modern era. It's like, are we really even sure, you know, who attacked us? And I can tell you that when I see something, I automatically think it's fake.
Yeah. For the most part, yeah.
I'll start with fake and work my way back from there. I don't start with it's true and try to work it back out from fake. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. If it's a part of the, you know, the mouthpiece of the federal government, then chances are you're probably not being told even a quarter of the truth. Right. That's a good rule of thumb, you know. Well, but anyway, all right. In closing, though, why don't you tell everyone about the Wolf Pack and Wise Wolf and how they can find your other work and how and where you broadcast throughout the week, just so I don't screw it up. Because you're an actual broadcaster. I'm a researcher that thought, you know, he would give this a go. So,
well, you've given it a go. It's gotten, and you're good. So yeah, you are a broadcaster.
Thank you.
Stop that. Okay. You need to internalize that and just be here. If you weren't, I wouldn't be on your show.
That's you a good were
just,
point.
You know, okay. Like, do you think I just, this is my personal time. You think I'm just doing this for my health? I'm doing it because you're a real broadcaster and a researcher, and you're a co-host. By the way, Chris is a, and I'm going to put this on the masthead and the, show information, official co-host of Paratrooper, and him and Mr. Anderson. I haven't done it, but you're an official co-host of a show that I have, which is deep dives into the unknown, the unexplained, conspiracy, you know, life, big questions, and no BS. And that Chris Graves is absolutely a part of that. My website is arterburn.news. It's my last name.news. I'm about to change it. It's going to change over. We're going to have a whole bunch of changes, and because I'm doing a lot more media this year, and I got a book coming out, and we're going to roll out a lot of cool stuff. And that's kind of in conjunction with freeworld.fm, which is Free World. You're on freeworld.fm. That's a new station that we've created. And we just implore people, please go over there, sign up. You know, we're going to get an app very soon. You can download the app, and it's just no, like it's controlled by us. So there's not going to be any filler or nonsense and real talk, the best of the best of our ability. So go over to freeworld.fm. And of course I sponsor all this through my precious metals business, Wise Wolf Gold and Silver. You can find that, just type in Wise Wolf. But I created something with the Wolf Pack. Now did you get an affiliate link? I got to send you an affiliate link. Okay. So yeah, that needs to be done. You got to. Yeah, you need one. We got to fill that out. You need to be an affiliate. Wolfpack is an idea kind of born out of the fact I wanted to do the inverse of, that's what I usually like to do. I look and see what the big boys do, and I do the opposite.
Right.
It's like, because they're chasing like these, you know, when you buy precious metals, it's like, oh, I, you know, because that's my first time I ever bought a gold coin. I was 22. And the guy was like just crestfallen because I only had like $2,500.
Right.
And he's like, oh, this is a kid calling me. I had to go to war. Sorry. You know, like I was like, I had all the money I had. I had to go to, you know, go do Operation Iraqi Liberation, the OIL. And right. And so I had to go do that. But I bought my, and he put me in some garbage. You know, it's like a numismatic. Numismatic's a collectible. Should have put me in bullion. I had like a bunch of American Eagles at the time. They're only like $300.
Right.
But he didn't. And so I learned a lot. So over the years, so I created Wolfpack, which is like the complete inverse, which is if you don't have a lot of money, and it goes all the way up to $5,000 a month. But if you want to start at $50, and we even have one for kids at $35 called Wolf Cub, we pick your metals. We put them. It's not like a sleight of hand or a magic trick. You get a full invoice. Like, we find your metals. We source them through two different physical locations, or I buy them from the trading floor. And I just have a, you know, I got almost, you know, 800 people every month, and we buy for them. So if you're interested in precious metals, if you really want to get the best deal in some variety, like gold back notes and fractional silver and sovereign coins, go to wolfpack.gold. If you want to write me a note and say you found me on this show or through Chris, I'll give Chris credit. I need to get him an affiliate page. This is my life, because I don't do enough, right? Chris doesn't have an affiliate page yet. But we'd love to have you. That the more people that come in, the better deals I can get everybody. So this is how I think. Like, nobody does that. Like, no precious metals dealer care if you got $50. I'm sorry. They just don't. They just like, oh, you know, like they want you to have 10,000, 20,000, 50,000, whatever. And we get those deals too. We're happy with them. But if you're just a regular person like Tony was, when I was starting out, I could barely afford that. So go check out Wolfpack. Proud of it.
That's great. And no, I'm honored to be a part of Paratruther, and I'm honored to know you. And I hope everyone that tuned in today and is going to watch this and listen to it later on, this will be on freeworld.fm on Friday. I'm going to send it over the moment we're off the air. And it's always a pleasure, sir. And to everyone out there, thanks for tuning in. And until next time.
Thank you,
Chris. Take care, everyone.